questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change.
We are each on our own journey. We can travel the very same roads and yet see very different things from one another. And even when something draws our attention, we can choose to turn away or not. That's what makes the leader's journey different. There's no turning away. Once you see it, you cannot unsee it if you know that changing it matters. In this episode, Jonathan shares the story of how his vision of meaningful change emerged as he journeyed through life.
Jonathan, read the next card in Amplify, please.
Tell the story of how you discovered this opportunity for significant change. What was your journey of discovery? What was it that prompted you to know that this could, should, or must change? What did you see? When? How?
It's asking the visionary that.
If I look at my vision now as I've articulated it to you, it's a slow discovery, because if you look at the ideas inside the vision, particularly the notions of freedom, dignity, solidarity, respect for difference, and how we knit all of this together. In some ways, this has been the ruminations around that, the writing around that, and then the seeing of those values in action in our life or not, and the times when they've been forgotten, denied. In some ways, it's the life I wanted. In some ways, when I went to, not so much when I went to Brussels, the journey to Brussels was not the end. There was not the destination. There were lots of points on the way, and points after it as well. Copenhagen now, but it's not a linear journey of leaving England. And then going to Brussels via a couple of years in France, a year in Poland. It's not a linear geographical journey. It comes back to this idea of things that you know to be true within you, your core truth, but which have changed over time, or they've matured, or they've been challenged, and perhaps through being challenged they've emerged stronger, but only after a moment of doubt. And sometimes not appreciating the importance of things until they're under threat. An important part of the story here is how, you know, feeling this opportunity for change now, I wouldn't have felt it 20 years ago, not only because I was 20 years younger, but because the world at the time, so I'm talking about the turn of the century, was not, certainly not a perfect place. Far from it, but we were still in a moment of deep optimism. So if we talk about how one's own age and one's position in life is in tune or not with the world around you. When I was 20, and the Berlin Wall had just fallen, it was impossible not to feel a huge sense of optimism. And this is why I said, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that part of me was aware that my vision, as I'd articulated it in its first form, that my vision had parts to it that were very familiar and were not new. I was challenging myself. There was a little voice that was saying, is this okay? Are we really standing on new ground here? Are we really breaking with the past here? Now, after all the discussions we've had and sitting here now, I do feel that it's very much my vision, and it is new, that there is a breaking with the past here. But I, as I've said a number of times, and this is a little voice, but which is a powerful one, it is new ground, but it's not, let me search for an analogy here, it's new ground, but it's not a new planet. I don't want to take myself or anybody else to another planet, a new planet. That just doesn't interest me at all. I think it would interest some people. I think it's what Elon Musk wants to do.
Part of that could be escapism.
Yeah. And wanting to, I'm not going to say this about him. I don't know him. But there is that extreme side of human invention, the at its outer edge, perhaps at its more, it seems to me, again, this is the man who is not a scientist talking about science and invention, that there seems to me that part of humanity which is drawn to this idea of moving on completely. You know, we're beyond new ground here. We're on a different planet, a new planet. And it doesn't appeal to me at all. Let me digress just for a second to give you an example. We see this in the wonderful films of Christopher Nolan over the last 10 years.
Mm,
If you look at Interstellar, for example, there is the main character, the Matthew McConaughey character, at some point in the film says, "We are not." I'm paraphrasing here, and I'm hoping that I'm not doing an injustice to the script, the wonderful script. That we were never meant to die here on this planet. Now, is that said in the context of an Earth beyond its climate collapse, and where the humans talking to each other already know that the Earth is dead or dying, and this is what the film turns on, this idea that the departure to another planet is survival. It's survival. And there's a celebration of this myth of survival in that film, in Interstellar, which if the Western story is to move west, people leaving Europe to go to America, mm-hmm. and then the West would move across America towards the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. And then there's nowhere else to go.
There's
a big
ocean. Yeah. And that's, I think this is the reason, it's one of the reasons why I reject that celebration of the idea of, or even the acceptance of going to another planet, because it suggests we've given up. We've given up on the idea that we can live here sustainably, which is the most urgent question now as we face a climate crisis. We're in the climate crisis. So why do I say this? Because I'm trying to come back to this idea of the new ground. There is part of me that says it's utterly necessary, as you have helped me understand, Marianne, this idea of new ground is utterly necessary to a vision which is truly new. Mm-hmm. We have to stand mm-hmm. on new ground. It's about something that we haven't seen yet, or something that others haven't seen yet. I may have seen it, but others haven't yet. I completely get that. But as I try to answer this question, tell the story of how you discovered this opportunity for significant change, I can't speak of one particular moment that there has been... This has been a constant questioning throughout my life. How do we reconcile these different competing values, these competing visions of what the good life is, and which are not just political manifestos or political programs of different parties. These are voices and urges, moral inclinations that are competing within us. So we're back to the parliament of our own minds and the urge. I think the urge, one of the urges in my vision is to find a way, an answer, which corresponds to this idea of our fractured selves across a fractured community. How do we address that? What's the answer to that? And that's been a question that has animated my political life, but also my conversations with friends and family over the last 30 years. Now, has that intensified over the last 6 or 7 years? Absolutely. And my work has responded to that. If I've responded so viscerally to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and what that represents as a threat to the European Union, that there is something new already happening here. There is an urgent threat now. So let me perhaps finish on this note as an introduction. There is the urgency of now, what is happening now in the world around us, and then how that interacts with the debates that you've been having within yourself over 20, 30 years or more. So that's the story. That's my story of how I am discovering now, again, this opportunity for significant change. It's a mixture of something very new, very urgent, with a questioning and a debate within myself, but also with friends that has been going on for some time.
Mm. You've made it clear, Jonathan, that this was not a momentary insight for you. In fact, the last 20, 30 years has been that. So note that in that, you had the ability to see the cracks, the fractures. They grew, they expanded, they proliferated to a point where it was no longer tolerable. Must change, yeah? But your ability to see the cracks takes acuity to have that sharpness of vision, to see it, not blur it, just see it so vividly. And I want to contrast that. You said earlier, scanning the landscape. Mm. When you scan, do you see with acuity what's in that landscape when you're scanning?
I'm wondering if you don't feel it. And that's what makes the difference. Mm-hmm.
Your compass is the feeling, drawing you to where you feel it most.
Yes, and perhaps bringing us back to art and fiction and film and music as not the heartache itself, mm-hmm. but how we express and feel the heartache. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned all the various forms of art. Let me bring journalism back in there as well. My deep admiration of journalism and the people who do this, who put their body on the line to get mm-hmm. to the truth, who risk their lives to get to the truth. That's part of it as well. So scanning the landscape, but feeling it as well. Yeah, it's not just analysis. I think I have a good analytical mind. Teachers used to say to me, you've got a good analytical mind. You can break something down into its different parts and see what's going on, mm-hmm. but that's not enough. Mm-hmm. You have to feel it as well. Mm-hmm. So scanning the landscape, but feeling it as well.
Thank you. And since you invoked Elon Musk, I do have to draw a comparison.
Okay.
not musk bashing. However,
we've never been confused.
No, you've never been. Well, not yet. Not yet. But because of the intersection of new ground. So the intent of your establishing going together with others to new ground is not to claim new ground. It is not to expand your empire. It's not at all ego-driven, right?
Yes.
It's not about being the first to claim that new ground. Mm. And therefore, even you could take it to the extreme, having new territories, new markets. That's not what it's about for you,
no,
is it?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Nor is it about, at one point we spoke of explorers. That might have been off audio in another conversation. We do have other conversations in between as we decompress. So this card here, what was your journey of discovery? It would be easy to liken it to the journey that explorers took to discover new lands, right? The Champlains and the Christopher Columbus, or maybe not, but what they were seeking to do was to discover the new land and then to build upon that new land. So how does that differ from your discovery, your journey of discovery?
The first thing that grabs me here, and it feels counterintuitive, but it's, do you remember there was the card which we are invited to put down five words, which express who we are. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but it's essentially
your reason for being.
Your reason for being. And I remember writing down journey without really fully understanding it. But I thought, be truthful here. It's coming to mind. It's put it down. Go with it.
It had a question mark behind it.
It did have a question mark. And it's on the card again now. What was your journey of discovery? And you've talked, Marianne, about surveying the landscape. What do we see when we... When we look around the world in which we live today, the landscape, there's also for me the journey of discovery. Part of it was looking back as well, I think. Certainly when I wrote that question, I think it was this moment in life where you not out of any sense of nostalgia, but out of a desire to understand your own life and the patterns of your life and the shape of it and what's driving it forward. And I couldn't help but see my grandfather and his journey, an understanding that somehow, certainly with no will of his, he's not involved. This is my interpretation of his life and how I continue it in some ways. And that was the idea of the refugee. I'm not a refugee because I've been very lucky. I've been very fortunate. I've not had to be a refugee. But he was a refugee and he arrived in England. I briefly told you the story. He arrived in England as somebody who had fled. Well, he'd been ultimately liberated from captivity. He'd been held with his family in a Soviet internment camp in Siberia for 18 months after the Nazi and Soviet invasion of Poland. And this is partly partly explains my passion for what Ukraine is going through now, because my grandfather was born in a part of what was then Poland, but which is today Ukraine, because of the shifting of borders at the end of the Second World War. But it comes back to my story of what Europe is and what it can be.
Exactly.
You know, my story.
Your
story. That we are all refugees in Europe. We are all refugees in Europe. All of us. All of us. We are refugees. Now, why is
whether they were, those individuals you speak of, were born in Europe or not, they're all, We are all refugees, yes. You said.
Yes. In the same way that if I look at this country now, we're all Danes. I joke about this sometimes with my Danish friends, but if you look at the influence of the Danes through the Vikings and just how many Danes stayed and made a new community here, the percentage of the population 1,000 years ago, so 100, 200 years into the Viking settlement of this country, the number of people on these islands who were ethnically Danish, it was enormous. I don't want to quote a percentage, but so I laugh today, we're all Danes, but we are.
Why do you see us as all, or them, as all refugees?
Well, I'm deliberately choosing a wider definition of refugee. In today's context, it's people fleeing war, repression, torture, in most cases.
Disenfranchised.
Yes, in so many different ways.
Torment of whatever.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Fleeing, they're aiming to flee.
That's right.
Or they have already fled.
Yes.
You know, it strikes me that we're using the word vacation wrong. Because many people go on, quote, vacation to escape their life. Of course, forgetting that they bring themselves with. And in the escape of one's life, you're seeking refuge outside of your country. Let's say the vacation is outside of the country. So much more appropriate to say I'm going on a week-long refugee expedition, seeking safety in a place that is not my home. I'll be back.
Seeking refuge in a place that's not my home.
Yeah.
Refugee is defined as an exile who flees for safety. Exile in your own country, exile in your own home, exile in whatever vessel you live in.
Yeah, this is where we need to get to, Marianne. This is where we need to get to because I know somewhere in the soil of my vision, I can't quite articulate it yet, but the vision, my vision for me speaks to this idea that even in the parts of this country, other parts of Europe and beyond, but certainly within Europe, there are people who feel uprooted, disconnected, disenfranchised, not listened to, who feel alienated,
Invisible. They've lost themselves.
Yes, even though they live in their hometown, still. Okay, even though they haven't, you know, the pace and often the brutality of technological and social cultural change has been such that people do feel uprooted. Now, that's not saying that they are refugees, but they are lost in some way, or certainly alienated, lost a sense of identity, lost a sense of stability. So there is something here about even if you have avoided through your own good fortune and the stability of the world that you grew up in, even if you have avoided the escape, the experience of a refugee, even if you have not known that, you feel something across society where people are lost in some way or uprooted is. Because I want to reclaim uprooted. Why? When the debate around the United Kingdom's place within Europe was at its most brutal and nasty and violent, the people who wanted Britain to leave would often point the finger. Prod their finger at the so-called elites, the people who were at home, at peace with the idea of Europe. And the people prodding the finger would say, you are citizens of nowhere. You are the uprooted elite. You don't care where you live. You have no sense of place, no sense of home. Utterly absurd as an idea. So this is where we need to rescue language and rescue ideas again. Mm-hmm. There are people within our countries, wherever they are across Europe, who have not left home, but still feel uprooted, I think.
And that word exile might reveal more, because we talked about refugee being someone who is an exile. One of the definitions of the noun exile, a person who is expelled from home or country by authority, or the act of expelling a person from their native land. And verb expel from a country. So if you replace the word country, maybe for you it would be nation, maybe it would be home. What would it be? But to be expelled as a refugee, expelled from that place. Yeah.
Yes.
Even when you're in your hometown,
Yes. And how many forms this can take, yeah? We talked about poverty, yeah, the suffering of children. Really getting to the hardest part of this. Where a country doesn't tell the story of itself, and this again, it's one of those moments where, you know, we say to ourselves, how can there possibly be any similarities between a country and a person? That they are both completely inapt metaphors for each other in both directions. It just doesn't work. And yet, I deeply believe that just as a human to maintain integrity, needs to pursue the truth and to be able to tell a truthful story about themselves, yeah.
The precision of your words is beautiful. I can see how you're just choosing so precisely.
And it's a pursuit again. We talked about pursuit.
Yeah.
No human being can get to the perfect, definitive truth about themselves. Yeah. I just don't believe that's possible because we're inside ourselves. So there are mechanisms of denial, delusion within us that we will never ultimately defeat. Yeah, so we never get to the truth about ourselves. But that's not the question. The question is, do we want to try? Do we want to pursue it?
Do we want to try?
Yeah, do we want to give it a try? Are we ready to try? Mm-hmm. Look ourselves
willing
in the mirror.
Willing to try.
See the things that are unpleasant. And then, even then, that's not enough. Are we then willing to change them? Mm-hmm. So are we willing to see our demons and then confront them? And even if we start losing arms and legs in the battle with the demon, are we willing to carry on? So it's beyond just truth. It's the willingness to confront it. Now is this fundamentally different from the nation, the country? I'm not sure. If this country, and yes, I am going to talk about this country because I'm going to talk about a particular film. Why? Because there's a great question on this is, what was it that prompted you to know that this could, should, or must change? What did you see when? Well, I'm going to give you a very specific answer to that. Because I've talked about the slow burning change within me, or the debates that have gone on and on. But then there are moments where you sense that one of the many mantras we've used this week, this cannot continue. I remember watching the film Daniel Blake by Ken Loach, one of the great filmmakers in this country. And there is a... It's a film about many things, as his films are. He does this wonderful thing. as the great writers Ali Smith and Zadie Smith do. You know, they reconcile a personal vision with a public political vision in their work, and Ken Loach does that as well. So they're very human stories about families, but necessarily with a hard political edge. So in Daniel Blake, which is a story of Britain's welfare system, there is just a crushing moment where a mother walks into I want to say supermarket. I think it's a food bank. You know, something that has been created specifically to answer the hunger, yeah, the hunger of the local community. So this country still has, I don't know, many hundreds of or thousands of food banks in 2023. And there's a moment where she goes over to a shelf and she opens a can.
Take your time. There's feeling there.
She opens the can and she feeds herself. She feeds herself from the can with her hand. And it's a film. It's a film. And I'm sitting in a cinema watching a film. And then, you know, probably having a very nice meal with my family after the film. But it's a moment where you just say enough. This can't go on. This can't go on. So back to the card here. What prompted you to know that this could, should, or must change? What did you see? Well, this is just one example. It's just a film. Mm-hmm. And here I am, many years later, wondering what I've done to change that situation.
Mm-hmm. You've been taking the journey.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You've been taking the journey to this moment, Jonathan.
Yeah. And it's a slow burn, Jonathan. And you are embodying, you are modeling for others, that as you start to express your vision, it's not a one, let's do this one step together, quick fix. It is not that.
No.
Igniting that level of significant change, first of all, takes a collective, but takes a collective working in unison together over a period of time,
mm-hmm.
perhaps a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So the fact that you, first of all, were triggered by that, it ignited you to see. And then since then, you've seen other, you could call it evidence, manifestations, symptoms, whatever, that together, all combined, are cumulative, sadly consistent, but registering on that one, I'm going to call it a false note that you saw. This is a false note in the realm of truth.
Mm.
False note.
Yeah.
Had you not seen that first false note, you may not have been able to unite or see the pattern among all the other things.
Right. Yeah, that rings true. That rings true. Yes. And again, it's the power of it's the power of fiction in a free society. It's not. I mean, it can be escapism, but it's also a way of getting to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a documentary, and this is important.
Mm. This
was a film.
It was a film.
Ken Loach.
He had a message to get out,
yes,
there, didn't he?
And he'd invented characters.
Yeah.
He'd invented a story. It's fiction.
Mm-hmm. It's fiction.
It's not. He's not walking around a city with a camera making a documentary. It's fiction. It's the power of fiction.
But it's interesting that in our world, that fiction was so real to you that it prompted that from you, that reaction to you. And yet, what is that classification of reality TV show, which purports to be real, just put cameras on people, watch how they behave, it's real, is anything but. It's fabricated, it's manipulated, orchestrated, yeah. Whereas what you saw as fiction was actually more real.
Mm. Yes, yeah.
And you have shared with us numerous times now about how art has been able to move you. And that may be a clue to your ability as you move forward to help others move. Maybe initially through your book. Mm. But you see the power of art to move.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As you say, as a way to move, but also a way of getting to the truth. Mm-hmm. It's this wonderful paradox mm-hmm. that through fiction we get to the truth or a truth. Right? Mm-hmm. And again, it's the pursuit mm-hmm. that matters.
Exactly. Mm. Is there anything you need to add, or do you want to go back to that question to sum up?
No, I think mm-hmm. I'm going to settle on this idea that there are two things going on. I've described a moment in a film, a moment in a piece of fiction where you will never forget what you feel at that particular moment, what it's telling you. Mm-hmm. It's something that may last only a few seconds, but it's so powerful. It's telling you something.
It's anchoring in you, even though it may just be a second. It's a spark that then starts to create the embers that keep going.
Yes, and also, yes, but also the moment of intolerance.
Yeah, enough.
Yes, you realise that, and I've said a couple of times, I think that, and let's not go back into the national politics or the party politics, but a community can reach a moment of despair and loneliness and inequality and suffering where it just cannot be reformed. You cannot reform your way out of it. There is no new government majority or new manifesto which is going to change it.
No matter what their promises claim to be.
Yeah, things have gone too far. The soil, mm-hmm. the soil has lost its ability to revive, to feed the nation, yeah? The soil needs to be changed.
And another, yours is much more powerful, but I'm getting... You can't put lipstick on a pig. Do you know that expression?
Sure.
You have to change the... Yeah. So in your case, you see that. Not everyone does.
And well, it's the power of who's telling the story, isn't it? Mm. It's the power of who's telling the story. Sadly, Ken Loach's story, and he's made many great films, he is not at the center of the storytelling of this country's life.
Mm, what about you? How's your storytelling? Nice sigh.
I don't know. We'll find out,
Jonathan. Yeah. I've already heard you tell some compelling stories. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Feeling played a key role in this conversation. Jonathan's vision of change emerged from scanning the landscape of what is now not just seeing it, but feeling it. He knows he couldn't have had this vision 20 years ago, feeling optimistic about the world. It comes now from his strong urge to address our fractured selves and fractured communities, and speaks to the idea that there are people who feel uprooted, disconnected, alienated even, within their own home. His story of the woman in the film eating from a can evokes strong feelings for him still. And that's just as it should be, as he begins to amplify his vision so that others feel it matters too. Enough to want to help him realize it. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned.
I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Alumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Alumify's website at alumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.